Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is March 19, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Thai remittance platform starts processing Ripple payments. Swiss blockchain exchange SDX hires consensus startup boss to head business. Judge calls out Kleiman attorneys over excessive fees in Craig Wright case. Storj's decentralized cloud storage service Tardigrade goes live. VC deals in crypto remain steady but amount invested fell in 2019, report. CME Bitcoin options volume hits record low, while backed goes weeks with no trades. Bitcoin sees 9% gain as turmoil hits the Forex markets. Crypto progressives become conservative with their own chains. Now let's get started. Thai remittance platform starts processing Ripple payments. A Bangkok-based remittance platform has become the first non-banking institution in Thailand to use Ripple's blockchain tech to process international payments. Ripple said Wednesday D-Money is now using RippleNet to process transactions in a move aimed to cut costs. Launched in 2018, D-Money provides same-day settlement services for Thai bank accounts. The company turned to RippleNet to increase the efficiency of transactions coming into the country, said CEO Aswin Flafangfanich. Ripple's technology provides a single, automated system that speaks the same way to all its 300 partners worldwide, making it simple for our tech teams to integrate into our process, he said. This helps to reduce manual work and intervention, which in turn reduces costs, of which the savings are passed to our customers. Thailand is a hub for settlement and remittance services. The Bank of Thailand estimates that more than 1 million Thais work overseas, many of whom continue to send money back to their families. Siam Commercial Bank, SCB, Thailand's largest commercial bank, first started testing a RippleNet-based cross-border remittance solution in 2018. The collaboration developed and SCB has added additional settlement services, including one based on a mobile app. See also, third-party cryptos could launch on XRP Ledger, says Ripple's David Schwartz. RippleNet is a 300-plus network of banks and financial institutions that use Ripple's blockchain for cross-border settlements and remittances. One of several products under its umbrella called On-Demand Liquidity, ODL, lets firms use the XRP cryptocurrency to avoid having to tie up large amounts of fiat currency. It's not clear if D-Money is using that particular service. Ripple famously invested in MoneyGram last year, with the money sending giant now using various Ripple products including XRP via ODL. D-Money said it plans to add support for transactions going out of Thailand, too, although a timeframe for that integration was not disclosed. Swiss blockchain exchange SDX hires consensus startup boss to head business. Tim Grant, formerly the CEO of consensus-backed startup Drum G Technologies, is to become head of business at Swiss blockchain-based stock exchange SDX. SDX, the digital asset trading venue being built from the ground up by Swiss stock exchange operator Six Group, had been searching for a leader to take over from interim CEO Thomas Kindler. As the new head of business, Grant fills that role, a spokesman for SDX confirmed. Grant has also previously served as CEO of the R3 Lab and Research Center. SDX selected R3's Corda platform to supply the DLT infrastructure for the new digital asset exchange in March 2019. I am very excited to join the leadership team at SDX as they aim to launch the world's first end-to-end digital exchange, said Grant in a statement. The team has already made huge progress, and I am looking forward to contributing my experience and working with our institutional clients around the world to continue the growth and expansion of the next generation of financial market infrastructure. It's unclear where this leaves Grant's other venture, Drum G. The startup, which aimed to create interoperability between enterprise versions of Ethereum and R3's Corda network, had raised some $6.5 million in Series A funding from Consensus back in October 2018, and Joe Lubin, CEO of the Ethereum Studio, had joined Drum G's board of directors. As recently as last September, Grant was taking to the stage espousing the merits of Drum G Technologies, which employs about 20 staff across offices in New York, London, and Bermuda. However, Consensus appears to be recalibrating its outgoings and has been forced to cut staff this year from some parts of its operations. Neither Grant, Drum G, nor Consensus returned requests for comment on the state of the venture by press time. Bumpy road. The past 18 months have been something of a bumpy road for SDX. The project was forced to delay its rollout, slated for summer 2019, until around the end of this year. In addition, Ivo Sauter, SDX's head of clients and products, and Sven Roth, its chief digital officer, both left their full-time positions in January, with a disalignment from the project's original goals being cited after original SDX chief Martin Halblaub departed last summer. Tomas Kindler, who was filling in for Halblaub, expressed a wish to take a senior position within the main exchange group, according to a SIX spokesman. Kindler would help oversee the planned integration of Bolsa's Y Mercados Espaules, BME, the Spanish stock exchange SIX has bid for. Tim has a comprehensive background in both the new and old worlds of capital markets innovation, said Thomas Zeeb, head securities and exchanges at SIX Group, and chairman of SDX, said in a statement. This background is an essential prerequisite to successfully lead the development of SDX and to fulfill SIX's growth ambition to build the financial ecosystem of the future. We are pleased to have him on board and look forward to working with him to execute our vision, he said. Judge calls out Kleinman attorneys over excessive fees in Craig Wright case. The legal team representing the brother of Craig Wright's deceased business partner greatly overclaimed on legal fees, according to the judge overseeing the case. Magistrate Judge Bruce Reinhardt of the Federal Court of the Southern District of Florida criticized the fees claimed by the attorneys representing Ira Kleinman, who is suing Wright for 50% of the Bitcoin, BTC, and intellectual property he owned before 2014 as excessive and ruled they wouldn't be granted in full. Kleinman's four-man legal team filed for a total of $658,500, comprised of more than $592,000 in attorney fees, as well as roughly $66,000 in other expenses like subject experts. But finding these rates too high, the judge slashed what the Kleinman team can actually claim to $113,760 in fees and $52,000 in expenses. That's a grand total of $165,800, approximately a quarter of the amount originally sought. Kleinman's suit against Wright, which claims Wright had tried to seize assets that rightfully belonged to his dead brother's estate, has been rocky for the Australian tech entrepreneur, who also claims he's Bitcoin's inventor, Satoshi Nakamoto. Wright has been found in contempt of court for not revealing Bitcoin holdings and accused of abusing privilege to withhold documents potentially crucial to the case. In November 2019, Wright pulled out of an out-of-court settlement that had been tentatively agreed upon 2 months previously. See also, Judge blasts Craig Wright's evidence, inconsistent testimony in Kleinman trial. But in this week's order, Judge Reinhardt found Kleinman's four attorneys claimed fees at rates that either exceeded their experience or were simply out of proportion to the amount usually charged in the Florida court system. He also found the legal team inflated billable hours, by either overstaffing or exaggerating the time it took to perform tasks. I find all these rates to be excessive. I am personally familiar with the hourly rates charged by the top civil litigators in Palm Beach County, said Judge Reinhardt. In one example, the judge asked why three attorneys were needed to prepare and review the response to a motion from the defendant. It was not reasonable to have three lawyers involved to this extent to review a draft for a relatively straightforward pleading, he said. In another instance, Judge Reinhart said the attendance of three attorneys at an evidentiary hearing was excessive. The costs were awarded due to protracted litigation over production of documents identifying Dr. Wright's Bitcoin holdings, according to the order. Wright now has until March 30 to pay out the legal team's reduced fees and expenses. Storj's decentralized cloud storage service Tardigrade goes live. Decentralized storage provider Storj Labs says its blockchain-based cloud service is now available for businesses and individuals to securely store files and documents. With the formal launch announced Tuesday, users are now able to begin migrating and backing up data onto the Tardigrade decentralized cloud storage service named after the famously hard-to-destroy microorganisms. The open-source network, which currently has 19 petabytes 19 million gigabytes of available capacity, is hosted on thousands of nodes run by individuals and partners based all around the world. There are currently about 3,000 users on the platform. Decentralization benefits the cloud in many ways, and our first customers are already seeing how it improves security, privacy, and resiliency, while also lowering costs, said Ben Golub, Storj Labs' executive chairman, who joined the company from Docker back in early 2018. When a file is uploaded, it is encrypted and then split into 80 fragments distributed on separate nodes. To hedge against the possibility an individual node could become compromised or experience an outage, users only need 29 pieces to fully reconstruct a file. Speaking to CoinDesk, Storj's co-founder and chief strategy officer, Sean Wilkinson, said the firm starts at about half the price of centralized cloud storage providers such as Amazon Web Services, AWS. There are also no bandwidth caps, meaning users can store as much data as they like on the platform. Based in Atlanta, Storj raised $3 million in seed funding from Google Ventures, Qualcomm Ventures and Techstars in 2017 when it decided to pivot towards becoming an enterprise storage system. The protocol launched in private alpha at the end of 2018. The platform migrated its storage service from Bitcoin to Ethereum back in 2017. Wilkinson said the company has no further plans to move protocols. Ethereum allows us to affordably send thousands of transactions to thousands of storage node operators each month, he said. See also, decentralized storage startup Storj to end token conversion program. Users already on the data storage management protocols, Kafkaesque, Flurry and CNCTED, as well as identity solution Verify all Storj launch partners who helped beta test Tardigrade will be able to access decentralized storage through a connector linking the platforms together. Designed to be fully compatible with developers familiar with the Amazon S3 protocol, Tardigrade can also be used for engineers building storage solutions in other languages including Python, Go and Android. VC deals in crypto remained steady but amount invested fell in 2019, report. Last year, crypto didn't see as many big bucks, late-stage VC deals as it did in 2018, a new report from CB Insights shows. While 2019 only saw 15 fewer deals than 2018 for a total of 807 deals, the deal volume dropped by 34%, from around $4.2 billion to nearly $2.8 billion. This is because of the absence of a few large late-stage deals in 2018, Bitmain's $400 million in equity financing, Coinbase's $300 million Series E and Hyperchain's $234 million Series B, according to the report, published Thursday. In 2019, the industry's largest raises were from Ripple's $200 million and Figure's $103 million Series C funding rounds. Still, the year saw 120% more volume than 2017's $1.2 billion. I don't think funding volume drops is indicative of the health of the industry. A lot of younger companies are raising rounds, said Alex Kern, fintech analyst at CB Insights. Larger, more mature businesses didn't come back for more capital. Funding fell from 2018 to 2019 across venture capital companies, corporate VC arms, angel investors, hedge funds and other investors. Corporate VCs, however, are 20% of the funding pie, coming up 9 percentage points since 2015. Angel investors had the second largest drop-off, with a deal decline of 13% year-over-year. Other was the largest category decline. Institutions are becoming more comfortable putting their capital into the space, while angel investors falling off is a sign of the industry maturing, Kern added. Over the past 4 years, VC deals have also been shifting from the US to China. From 2015 to 2019, VC deals in the space dropped by 20 percentage points in the US and rose by 20 percentage points in China. Part of it is regulatory. Binance is tremendously popular, and mining compares are in China with access to cheap electricity, Kern said. See also, after painful 2018, Chinese blockchain VCs are getting back into the market. Funding to cryptocurrency companies is still multiples of funding going towards enterprise blockchain. And though mentions of blockchain by corporates dropped by more than half year over year, enterprise blockchain funding saw an increase of 61% from 2018 to $434 million, largely because of Ripple's Series C funding for cryptocurrency firms was around $2.35 billion in 2019. The report added that many of the corporate consortia for enterprise blockchains such as Hyperledger and R3 are still in early stages. We're still seeing corporates launching proofs of concept and early trials, Kern said. It's hard to say if they're moving on pace or not because it's been hard to get good data. If they put out not only expectations of cost savings, but also what kinds of cost savings they're seeing as a result of deploying the tech at a larger scale, that would help. CME Bitcoin options volume hits record low, while Bakkt goes weeks with no trades. Demand for Bitcoin, BTC, options on regulated U.S. derivatives exchanges has dried up even as price volatility reaches record highs. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange, CME, traded just 3 Bitcoin options contracts on Tuesday, with a notional amount of 15 Bitcoin, approximately $80,000, the exchange told CoinDesk. That is CME's lowest daily volume for Bitcoin options on record, according to crypto derivatives firm Skew Markets. The previous record low of $125,000 was registered January 24. CME's product went live on January 13 and traded a total of $2.2 million in notional value on the first day, beating its rival, the Intercontinental Exchange's Bakkt platform, which had traded roughly $1 million since its open on December 9. Volumes on CME rose to a record high of $5.4 million on January 17, but have been declining ever since. As of Tuesday, trading volumes were down 96% from the minor spike of $2.1 million seen March 9. Meanwhile, Bakkt has seen no options trading activity since February 27. Bakkt rolled out its product on December 9 and saw a record volume of $528,000 in notional value on January 8. However, its options volume evaporated following the launch of CME's options in mid-January. Notably, Bakkt has traded option contracts on just 4 days since mid-January. The slowdown in activity on both CME and Bakkt is perhaps surprising, given that Bitcoin's price volatility has soared over the last few days. The cryptocurrency's three-month implied volatility, the option market's opinion of Bitcoin's potential moves, rose from 3.5%, 66.9% annualized, to a record high of 6.8%, 130% annualized, on a daily basis in the 7 days to March 17, according to Skew data. Heightened volatility typically fuels demand for hedging instruments like options, which are derivative contracts that give holders the right to buy or sell the underlying asset at a predetermined price on or before a specific date. A call option gives the right to buy, while a put option gives the right to sell. However, the opposite has happened in Bitcoin on regulated U.S. exchanges. Volumes have actually dropped precipitously as volatility has skyrocketed. See also, Bitcoin sees 9% gain as turmoil hits the forex markets. The decline in options volume seems to have been caused by institutional traders treating Bitcoin as a source of liquidity during the past week's massive stock market sell-off, which triggered a multitude of margin calls. Last week's market rout saw institutional investors selling many risk assets, including Bitcoin. CME is a regulated platform designed for traditional investment managers seeking Bitcoin exposure without a priority of ownership or utilization, and therefore saw a drop in volume as their customers led the flight to cash, Tom Lombardi, director at digital asset management firm Wave Financial, told CoinDesk. Supplementing that argument is the fact that open interest, or open positions on CME's option market, fell to a five-week low of $6.5 million of notional value on March 12 and stood at $8.4 million on March 17. That's down significantly from the record high of $22 million witnessed February 28. Bitcoin futures listed on CME have also seen a slowdown in activity. Open interest declined to a two-month low of $171 million last week, having hit a high of $338 million on February 12. Meanwhile, trading volume dropped to a three-month low of $88 million on March 6, after a record high of $1.1 billion on February 18. It was $212 million on Tuesday. The recent slide in volumes and open interest suggest traders likely closed out hedges, calls, puts, while liquidating positions in the spot and the futures market. Broad-based slowdown. Options trading volume on Deribit, the world's biggest crypto options exchange, slipped to $52 million on Tuesday to register its lowest level since March 1. Volume hit a record high of $248 million March 12 as Bitcoin crashed by a staggering 39% from $7,950 to $4,850, tracking risk aversion in the traditional markets. The downside move was likely exaggerated due to forced liquidations on the BitMEX exchange. Bitcoin sees 9% gain as turmoil hits the Forex markets. View. Bitcoin, BTC, is gaining amid a sell-off in fiat currencies and could rise further if the U.S. stock markets track European equities higher. Technical charts indicate scope for a rise to key resistance at $5,926. A move higher would confirm a breakout on the hourly chart and may propel prices towards $6,400. Bitcoin is on the rise Thursday morning, UTC, showing resilience in the face of a global dash for dollars seen in the foreign exchange markets. At time of writing, the cryptocurrency is trading near $5,670, representing a 9.4% gain on a 24-hour basis. Bitcoin found bids near $5,260 during the Asian trading hours and has been climbing since, according to CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. While Bitcoin is flashing green against the US dollar, most fiat currencies are currently trading in the red. For example, the British pound to dollar exchange rate is hovering near 1.1555, the lowest level since 1980. The currency pair has dropped by nearly 8% this week. The Australian dollar fell to a 20-year low of 55 US cents early on Thursday and is currently reporting a 0.6% drop on the day. The greenback has gained in the past six trading days against all major currencies, as noted by macro analyst Holger Zschäpitz. The surge indicates many investors are selling everything, even safe havens like Japan's yen and Swiss francs, to move their money into dollars over fears of a coronavirus-led recession in the global economy. If cash is king, then dollar cash is currently being world president, according to Ng's head of global markets. Bitcoin, however, isn't bowing down to the new cash overlord, and could see bigger gains if the U.S. equity markets put in a good performance in line with rising European stocks. At press time, the Euro Stoxx 50, the Eurozone's benchmark index, has added 1.3% to its value. A risk reset on Wall Street cannot be ruled out, as central banks from Australia to Canada have launched easing programs to inject massive amounts of liquidity into the system. Bitcoin's technical charts, too, are suggesting scope for a stronger recovery rally. Bitcoin defended the psychological support of $5,000 on Wednesday and ended up producing a small hammer candle, validating seller exhaustion signaled on Monday. A hammer candle occurs when sellers fail to keep prices at the lowest point of the day and is widely considered an early sign of a trend reversal. The MACD histogram is printing higher lows below the zero line, indicating a drop in bearish momentum. Bitcoin produced a green Marubozu candle in the 60 minutes to 10 o'clock Coordinated Universal Time, which comprises a big body and small or no wicks. The bullish indicator shows buyers were in control from the session's open to its close. The odds appear stacked in favor of a rise to the top of the ascending triangle at $5,926. A high-volume break above that level could cause more bargain hunters to join the market, producing a stronger rise to the next resistance at $6,425, December low. Conversely, a triangle breakdown would open the doors for a retest of the March 16 low of $4,446. Crypto progressives become conservative with their own chains. CoinDesk columnist Nick Carter is partner at Castle Island Ventures, a public blockchain-focused venture fund based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He is also the co-founder of CoinMetrics, a blockchain analytics startup. Most burgeoning crypto enthusiasts go through a phase in life where they think to themselves, Bitcoin is neat, but it would be so much better if it could just do X and Y. At this point, they either decide to hop aboard a new blockchain project, typically seeking to own a larger fraction of the supply than the share of Bitcoin they own, or they reject the notion and stick with Bitcoin. I'll call this former group, it could be better, crypto progressives. Like political progressives, they are interested in making changes to society, unsatisfied with the status quo. Crypto progressives often wonder why Bitcoiners are interested only in Bitcoin, BTC, given that so many apparently technically superior alternatives exist. How could they possibly ignore a dizzying buffet of alternatives? The crypto progressives sometimes accuse Bitcoiners of falling prey to the endowment effect, of refusing to budge because of their established stake in the Bitcoin system. And indeed, there are significant transaction costs involved with taking one's Bitcoin wealth and embracing a new blockchain. But this is not the chief reason for rejecting alternatives. See also, Nick Carter, How to Stop the Next Quadriga, Make Exchanges Prove Their Reserves. Bitcoiners tend to resent the accusation that their adherence to a sole project is merely contingent a historical coincidence which they clung to out of habit. When pressed, they typically refer to one of two main justifications. 1. Bitcoin is the sole instantiation of a set of political and economic conditions for a successful monetary project. In a sense, Bitcoin fulfilled requirements it may have already had for a successful monetary alternative, and it was only in 2009 that these requirements were met. 2. Monetary goods rely on network effects by design. Once a market leader is established, efforts at fragmentation are counterproductive. I tend to think the first set of arguments is persuasive on its own. Bitcoin prides certain important qualities that other alternatives jettison, and is genuinely unique in this way. This is not to say that other protocols are without merit, but they generally opt for different trade-offs, tending to prioritize innovation over institutional stability. Some of Bitcoin's underlying principles include a strong regard for property rights, manifesting itself in a predefined monetary schedule with no discretion, a commitment to cheap validation, easily concealable information as keys to one's assets, and the minimization of Cantillon insiders, i.e. people who can monetize their proximity to the money spigot. A development philosophy that stresses the opt-in nature of significant change. Hard forks are de-emphasized and soft forks encouraged. This allows the protocol to resist arbitrary change and protects the asset from expropriation, especially in a covert manner. A governance regime in which power is divided among developers, miners, and economic node operators, with no group having sole discretion over changes. Fairness in issuance and an absence of seigniorage, more precisely, a free market for seigniorage, meaning that miner margins are generally slim, enabled by proof of work. There's other ways to describe the economic and political nature of Bitcoin, but I would posit these as the most important. If you think values are important in the design of a monetary system, you are a Bitcoiner out of deliberate choice, not contingency. But there's an even more persuasive argument to be made against mutinous alternatives. It is the logical incoherence of crypto-progressivism. Crypto-progressivism. This is the idea that, if you replace a monetary standard and propose your own, you have no reasonable grounds to defend against someone else's rebellion over your standard, and their campaign to replace it with their own. And so, if you commit to the permanent revolution, you end up with a recursive situation where no stable monetary standard is ever selected. Hal Finney was perhaps one of the first Bitcoiners to ever make this point. In a comment on BitcoinTalk in 2011, he pithily explained the issue with crypto-progressivism. Any successful replacement of the Bitcoin blockchain will forever undermine the credibility of any successor. How is an investor to know that it won't happen again? Rebooting now may benefit a few thousand early adopters. What happens when hundreds of millions use Bitcoin too? They'll be just as jealous and envious of you as you are of others. Given the precedent you want to set, how will you argue against yet another reboot? Interestingly, Hal was responding to a thread, written in May 2011, when the price of Bitcoin was about $8, suggesting the stash of coins Satoshi Nakamoto and others mined early in 2009 constituted a tax on late adopters, and agitating for a relaunch of Bitcoin. See also, Nick Carter, Policymakers Shouldn't Fear Digital Money, So Far It's Maintaining the Dollar's Status. Hal understood that if one's objection to Bitcoin was the empowerment of early adopters, this would be a problem for all other would-be replacements. Interestingly, the circumstances of Bitcoin's birth were rather favorable as far as distribution is concerned. Satoshi appears to not have claimed his million or so coins. Many cheaply acquired coins from that era are lost. And due to the lack of a pre-mine and the presence of POW, everyone who earned coins had to pay market price for them, either at an exchange or with electricity. It's an inescapable reality that the rise of any novel monetary system, which entails demonetizing an existing store of value asset in favor of a new one, as has happened countless times in history, will benefit those earliest to make the switch. This is the case, for example, in dollarization events, when it is those who are earliest to desert the local currency that benefit from favorable exchange rates, to the detriment of their laggard peers. So monetary transitions involve wealth redistribution by their very nature. So far, we have not devised a means to take a snapshot of the distribution of wealth and replicate it in a new monetary medium. The more pressing questions to me are, how frequently should we churn monetary systems? And how much better must a successor be, to justify replacing an established one? Those WHO style themselves crypto-progressives when rejecting the orthodoxy almost inevitably become crypto-conservatives as they settle on a system they like. The example of Ethereum is telling. Ethereum initially competed with Bitcoin on features such as a more expressive base layer, theoretically cheaper transactions, greater throughput, and a commitment to rapid innovation. But when other blockchains like EOS came about and took these ideas to their extreme, by compromising on validation costs, EOS offers more block space than Ethereum, most Ethereans did not desert their blockchain in favor of the newcomer. Even though they had justified their initial rejection of Bitcoin with recourse to the exact same language that EOS fans were now using to renounce Ethereum, they for the most part held firm, making reference to the growing network effects in the Ethereum infrastructure that had been built so far. And this was a reasonable retort. From a societal perspective, it is costly to upend an established system every few years. So, those who style themselves crypto-progressives when rejecting the orthodoxy almost inevitably become crypto-conservatives as they settle on a system they like. Therein lies the paradox. Now, I am not suggesting that novel alternative blockchains that explore the trade-off space are illegitimate. Rather, their proponents should admit that they are simply positing a different set of values to those espoused by established blockchains, rather than blandly touting their improved feature set and assuming that users will make the switch. Monetary systems are fraught and political by their very nature, and coaxing users away is a matter of convincing them to upend an established institution that they have come to trust. The permanent revolution gets tiresome. Most people eventually want to settle down and cultivate their own garden. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.